Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365
specialist, blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker,
Microsoft
Azure MVP, and an Azure/PowerShell Premier field engineer working for
Microsoft,
helping people with a journey and making sense of Microsoft Azure.
You
are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
Welcome back to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane. I'm joined once again by my co-host over there, Mark Keane. Mark, how are you?
I'm fantastic, Rob. It couldn't be better.
So, I think that Mark would like us to ask him, how's your week been, Mark?
Oh, it's been fantastic, Rob. Started a new job at Microsoft. Loving it. Awesome. Best thing ever. It's the one.
And just remind the ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what exactly are you now doing for Microsoft?
Azure/PowerShell PFE.
Acronym translation, please.
This is the thing at Microsoft. It's all acronyms. Premier Field Engineer.
Excellent. So just give the audience a bit of an idea what that role is. What does that actually mean, being a PFE?
Well, all the enterprise level customers, they pay quite a bit of money for Premier support. And what that entitles is they get certain cases per year to log, sort of break fix cases, and that's done overseas on the phone in India or China or something. But then also part of that, you get proactive support as well, where there's people like myself go in and talk to the business and maybe do a workshop, draw stuff up in the whiteboard and cover off a few different things. For example, there's pre-canned proactive engagements that we can do, or we can do custom engagements as well if customers are running into any problems with their Azure journey.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's obviously going to keep you quite occupied, and by the sound of it, it's going well, and I'm sure you'll report back as to the progress as we get a bit further along. So, again, congratulations to Mark for that, and look for more deep insights into Microsoft on what he can reveal. But being in the belly of the beast is certainly going to give us an advantage here on the Need to Know podcast. But speaking of advantages on the Need to Know podcast, we need to thank our great sponsor, Rode. Why should we thank Rode, Mark?
Well, because we're up to episode number 152, and Rode are fantastic. They are the best, in my opinion, people that design and make the microphones, Rode and Rode microphones for that matter, and they have a fantastic range on offer. And so, thanks to Rode, they supply us with all our mics that we use to make this all possible.
Excellent. All right. We always like to thank people that do help the Need to Know podcast. We also like to thank everybody who's a listener, who has made contributions or given us some feedback. I received some feedback in the week from a listener who indicated or felt that I picked on Mark too much. So I sort of interpreted that as I don't pick on him enough. So that will certainly continue from this end of the
microphone. It's all in good faith. It's all in good humour.
And that's what I told them. I said, you've got no concept of what happens behind the scenes. So when we release the behind the scenes show, you'll certainly get to experience what it's really like to be
good taste
on the
it's all in good podcast. Taste.
Well, there's a bit of profanity in there, so we might not have to make it adults only.
What about you, Rob? What have you been up to lately?
Lately, I've got a presentation to do this morning on Office 365 security that'll take me to a couple of places around Australia. So we're talking about and focusing
again
on the
those airline staff hostesses must know you by your first name.
Not quite. I'm not a big fan of. I mean, it's great to be able to get places very quickly, but it's just a big bus ride generally. I think that
we've got a spare seat up the front at business class. Would you like to take a seat up here with us?
Yeah, I've never had that experience come across my plate, so if that happens, yeah, all for it. But at this stage, if anybody's listening from Qantas who wants to sponsor the podcast or upgrade me, by all means,
you're a Qantas person, are you?
To give my Qantas frequent flyer number. So anyway, we do need to get into news and keep it short, so we do have It's an interview with Rob Farley. So let me do some Office 365 stuff for you. To start off with, the Outlook Customer Manager is now rolling out worldwide. So this is a basic CRM package aimed at Office 365 business premium customers. So unfortunately, it's not available in any other SKU, but it gives you a basic CRM. It's like there was an old Microsoft product that hooked into Outlook that used to allow you to call Business Contact Manager from memory. This allowed you to basically manage your contacts and do a very basic CRM. So that product is now rolling out to your Outlook if you are a business premium subscriber. The other one we've got is that the ability to hook into groups within Outlook. So groups are basically the, the security entity now that gives you access to things like an email list, a SharePoint site, a planner, all of those great resources. That's now available in Outlook for the Mac, iOS, and Android. So that means that you can now access your group on those platforms directly from Outlook. So I've been able to do that on a PC and on the web for a while, but now we can get to them natively in the common applications and operating systems like Mac, iOS, and Android. So that's pretty handy because groups are really good and they are something that Teams then builds on. Now, what I also have here for the on-prem people, even though we do some of this stuff in Azure, in virtual machines, I'll put in the show notes a performance tuning guideline that I came across for Windows Server 2016. So again, it's a great guide here, covers about how to set it up and optimize your server 2016 for all sorts of different roles. So whether it's Active Directory server, a file server, Hyper-V server. So one of the things we might be bringing, we're talking about bringing to you here on the Need to Know podcast is maybe a bit of a how to migrate Microsoft Small Business Server to Azure, and the tuning guide will be something we'll be referring to. Now, we also have the SharePoint Virtual Summit that will be held next week in the middle of the night here in Australia, unfortunately. But for those of you who might remember, about a year ago, around May the 4th last year, Microsoft announced the future of SharePoint, and we've seen some great updates and enhancements come out to the SharePoint product from that conference last year, and we're having basically another one this year. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes if you want to subscribe. I'm sure it'll be recorded, but we're expecting a huge amount of good news from Microsoft coming out about SharePoint that we'll be able to bring you in upcoming episodes of the Need to Know podcast. And speaking about big conferences that Microsoft is running, Build in Seattle is running, I think from tomorrow, May the 10th, isn't that right, Mark?
Yeah, Build is, we're recording this podcast on the 10th of May, and in the US, on the 10th of May is when Build starts.
The Build conference is typically aimed at developers, but I think there's going to be a huge amount of stuff that's valid for everybody, so keen to see what's happening, and combine that with the Windows 10S and the Surface and Office 365 and SharePoint, it's all happening.
There's going to be a lot of announcements, they say. And look, even me now working at Microsoft, I can't say anything, and I couldn't say anything before even as with the NDA stuff. But look, there's going to be quite a few announcements happening at Build, quite substantial ones. And it's been talked about before. Obviously, the rumor has been like that for quite some time, that there's going to be announcements. It's been talked about internally and in the media and stuff like that. So we'll be definitely paying attention and following along at home, and we'll be announcing those announcements on the next Need to Know podcast.
Excellent. All right, what about some Azure news now?
New on-premises data gateway is now available in Azure. The gateway helps you securely connect your business apps in the cloud to your data sources on-premises. You can use the gateway to move data to and from Azure while keeping your data sources on-premises secure. The gateway currently supports Azure Logic apps to access data sources on-premises from your Logic app. Set up an on-premises data gateway that Logic apps can use with supported connectors. The gateway acts as a bridge that provides quick data transfer and encryption between data sources on-premises and your Logic apps. The gateway relays data from on-premises sources on encrypted channels through the Azure Service Bus. All traffic originates as secure outbound traffic from the gateway agent. So we'll put more details on that on my blog and in the show notes. And also to new Azure virtual machine sizes. So last year we introduced our first GPU N-series offering powered by NVIDIA's Tesla base GPU, which is a graphics processor unit. And we have seen an amazing customer turnaround and response with that. With that, the new Azure NC series is now available, and you can now run CUDA workloads up to four Tesla K80 GPUs in a single virtual machine. Wow. So additionally, unlike any other cloud provider, the NC series offers RDMA and InfiniBand connectivity for extremely low latency and high throughput and scale out workloads. Your workloads can scale up and scale out. In case you don't know what InfiniBand is a computer networking communication standard used in high-performance computing that features very high throughput and very low latency. And in case you don't know what RDMA is, it's direct memory access from the memory of one computer into another computer without involving each one's operating system. It permits high throughput, low latency networking, which is especially useful in massively parallel computer clusters. And CUDA is a parallel computing platform and API model created by NVIDIA. So use cases for the new NC series of virtual machines are artificial intelligence, deep learning, image recognition, speech training, natural language processing, and even pedestrian detection for autonomous vehicles. There is also the new ND series available of virtual machines powered by NVIDIA's Tesla's P40 GPUs based on the new Pascal architecture. These instances also offer a much larger GPU memory size of a whopping 24 gigabytes. And like our NC series, the ND series will offer RDMA and InfiniBand connectivity, so you can run large-scale training jobs spanning hundreds of GPUs. These new sizes will be available later in the year, but you can now sign up for a preview and the link for that in my blog and in the show notes as well. So there we go, Rob. That's pretty much all I've got on this episode.
All right, so just a quick note here. I seem to notice that the Azure dashboard is changing. There's lots and lots of changes, different look and feel. There's a new shell that's appearing. Yeah, some big changes there. What's the word?
Yeah, look, they've had these changes in the background for quite some time. And there is a bleeding edge portal, which I've been using. And one of the changes that I quite like is the fact that it's a grouping of the, I don't know if you've sort of clicked on the virtual machine section on the left-hand side, but when you click on the virtual machine section, you've got two virtual machine areas. You've got like classic and the current virtual machines, and they're separate. But what they're doing is they're grouping them together. And so you click on, say, virtual machines, and then in the list, you see both your classic virtual machines and your ARM-based virtual machines in the one list. And they're doing that the same with storage accounts. So you see all your storage accounts together in one, rather than having two separate menus. You've got one menu that says storage accounts, and you've got classic and ARM-based storage accounts in the one list. It's very, very nice the way they've done that.
Cool. All right. Well, lots to change, I'm sure, after
Have you seen any changes?
Yeah, I'm beginning to see a different look and feel in the when I go into the portal initially with the tiles. Security Center, I think, has also been updated. It's also now got the option up here for the Azure Cloud Shell. It's currently in preview, but with saying expect to hear something after build. So again, things are moving pretty quickly. And again, be good to see. And we should have a huge amount of news after build and the SharePoint conference and all that sort of stuff. So I think with that, we probably need to get into this episode with Rob Farley, unless you've got something else, Mark?
Nope, that's pretty much it.
I'm joined here by Rob Farley. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. How are you?
Excellent. All right. As we always do here on the Need to Know podcast, we need to let people know who you are, what you do. So if you give us a brief rundown of exactly that, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. Okay. So my name's Rob Farley, as hopefully most of your listeners are aware. I have a small consultancy across Melbourne and Adelaide. I live in Adelaide. I was going to say SQL Server stuff, but these days it's much more like Microsoft Data Platform, because of course there's the straight SQL stuff, but then there's also the BI stuff, there's all the cloud stuff, there's the cognitive services stuff. There's so many different aspects to the overall Microsoft Data Platform these days that I don't tend to actually describe myself as much of a SQL Server person anymore. It's always it's a bigger thing than that, but yeah, it's a we've been running for the consultancy for I guess 8 and a bit years now, and we're small, but we like to see ourselves as the specialists who can go in and sort something out or implement something or get to know your business and work out what needs to happen to make you more effective with your data, improve the overall data story where you are.
All right, so let me ask you before we kick off and get into our main section, why Lobster Pot Solutions?
It's funny you should ask that because it's one of, whenever people ask me, I say, well, it's because I know that you'll ask. At the end of the day, like 8-9 years ago, I needed a brand for a company that I was setting up, and I didn't want a 3-letter acronym. I didn't want a made-up word because, you know, nobody knows how to spell it. They're going, it was something like, and it just doesn't fit in people's heads. I didn't want something that was overly attached to me or overly generic. I wanted something that was easily logoable and that stuck in people's heads, that stood out in a list of companies, all of that kind of stuff. And so there really is no reason why the lobster or why the pot, the solutions bit makes sense because it says that we're not a restaurant, but Lobster Pot was just a thing that worked out. So in many ways, the why is because I know that you will ask why and I want you to remember it.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, it's a good bit of marketing. I use it for my business as well, so it's a bit of a like-minded. So what we've got Rob on to discuss is one of the many things that Rob does is he does speaking at conferences locally, internationally, and around Australia as well. And he recently wrote a very interesting article where he spoke about keynotes and presenting at technical conferences. Now, we'll put the link to that in the show notes, but probably what we want to do to kick this off, Rob, is, you know, what sort of motivated you to sit down and write this post you've got here on keynotes? What was your thinking behind that?
Well, largely it was because I had recently done a keynote for the first time. Technical presenting is something that I've done for a long time. I mean, I've been running the local SQL Server user group here in Adelaide where I live for 11 and a half years or something like that. It feels like a very long time, and have done an awful lot of public speaking during that time. It's part of what I do. I mean, I preach at my church relatively often. I've even done eulogies. I've done a eulogy for my grandmother. Some years back, you know, I'm public speaking is a thing that I'm quite accustomed to. The interesting one to that is actually that I've started a new hobby, which is stand-up. Every so often I go to an open mic night here in Adelaide, and I'm finding that it's quite challenging to stretch myself into a new space. But keynotes are a different kind of presentation to the typical type of thing that I would do at a user group or at a conference, whether it's a local small one, you know, Australia kind of level, or one of the big conferences like the PASS Summit over in the US. It's a keynote has to be a different kind of a thing, and so I put this article together partly to be able to say, hey, I've done a keynote. You could ask me to do that, you know, to do one for your conference if you want. And certainly if any of your listeners want to get in touch with me, they'll be able to get the contact details in the show notes, presumably. But I found it was a different kind of a thing, and I wanted to be able to express that and to be able to explain how I found it differently and so on. It was a good way to reflect on what the differences were.
So I suppose, again, to start off things, I mean, how is a keynote different? I mean, most people, especially in the technical sphere, who are probably our audience here, they rock up to a conference, they normally get a keynote from the vendor or from a major sponsor who probably tells them to buy more product. How's a keynote different from the normal tracks or the normal sessions in your mind?
Well, I'm going to separate out something. This is not a separation, it's just a distinction that I've made in that LinkedIn article that I wrote. But But I see there being a difference between what I consider the keynote and what I consider just kind of the conference welcoming speech stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you'll go to a slot which is called Welcome Plus Keynote or something like that at an event like a TechEd or Ignite, as it's branded these days, where somebody like Andrew Coates gets up, or, you know, used to be Cords when he was at Microsoft, and they would say, hey, welcome to the event, it's going to be great, and all this kind of stuff. But then, and they will talk about the types of sessions they've got happening, and maybe they might talk about something new that's going on in the space. But the bit that I consider the keynote aspect is the bit that's designed to be able to reach out to just about everybody in the room, rather than people that are interested in a particular technology. But as well as that, it has to be inspirational. It has to not be saying, ah, let me show you this thing that you can do. Instead, it's got to be a thing that actually makes you want to change something. It's got to be able to go in and say, hey, we're in an exciting time at the moment. We can see change coming through. Are you going to be part of this change, or are you not going to be part of this change? How are you going to be leaving this place different today? All these kinds of questions. They're keynote questions rather than regular session questions, or even welcoming, you know, welcoming comments sessions, you know, stuff. I kind of figure that in some ways the keynote isn't necessarily even given by somebody from Microsoft or a particular vendor. I remember seeing a keynote session where somebody who had been involved in making the movie Happy Feet got up and showed some of the amazing stuff about what they had done to actually have this amazing graphics in this movie come through. And the idea was not to be able to say, you know, hey, we use the Microsoft product and wasn't it great? The idea was to be able to say, you know, you can reach further. You can do things that are stretching yourself and so on. And now, I doubt that anybody in the room was looking at, oh, how do I make a feather look more realistic? But I think a large number of people in the room left going, you know, I can do more with the technology that I'm doing at the moment. That kind of inspiration is the key, I think.
So do you think that technical conferences, typically the Microsoft ones, the Ignite, the partner conference, those sort of things that we typically see as Microsoft partners, mm-hmm. are their keynotes done well, or are they basically just a product plug, in your opinion?
Oh, look, there are definitely times that keynotes are done badly. I don't particularly want to jump onto particular examples of that, but I do know, just because, you know, I don't want somebody to feel that I'm criticizing them in particular, but I do know that I've been to way too many conferences where the keynote is really just a description of the features that are in the latest version of some particular product, or it's a thing to be able to say, hey, have a look at some of the stuff you can do with Azure these days, or something like that, as opposed to something which is designed to inspire. It's looking at too much technical detail. Some of the demos are kind of describing things, like the demos have to be designed to show you how simple something is and how effective something it can be, and so on. And focusing on the inspiration rather than trying to teach you something, they're supposed to inspire you in some way. I see keynotes where, for example, at the PaaS Summit, they'll consider it a keynote when they get up and talk about how the membership of the PaaS organization has grown, how they're reaching people in more countries than ever before. And it's supposed to feel somewhat inspirational, but I'm not necessarily convinced that it is. That, to me, that feels more like an AGM, where they're saying, here's how the health of the organization is sitting. Whereas I do know that, for example, the closing keynote of a TechEd about 10 years ago or something like that in Australia talked about digital natives, and talked about how kids these days see technology in a digital world in a different way to the way that you know, most of the people in the room, essentially from a previous generation, saw the world, and how we need to be changing our thinking so that we are reaching this new generation in a different kind of way. I think everybody left that session, that closing keynote, thinking, yeah, actually, the world is not how I thought I was seeing it. The world is now different. They don't see a line between their digital life and their real life. The digital life is their real life. When they're talking to somebody by typing at them, that's exactly the same to them as a phone call. And to us, we see a line there. But the fact that we see that line actually stops us from reaching the next generation in the same kind of way. We need to think differently as far as user experiences. We need to think differently about the way that we speak about experiences and a way that we speak about life and think about life in general, because these kids that are coming through are different to how we are. Now, nobody learned anything from that, but we realized things that we hadn't thought of before. And that, to me, that was one of the most effective keynotes that I can remember over the years, because everybody left just going, yeah, you know, it's not, the world is not how we thought. When I look at TED Talks, a lot of TED Talks would make very effective keynotes because they're short and they speak to the heart. And in fact, speaking to the heart is this thing that I kind of looked at in that article. The fact that I differentiated between speaking to the head like you do in a regular session at a conference, or even in the welcoming bits of that Welcome Plus keynote thing, but speaking to the, because you're looking to teach people, you're looking to convey information. But if you want to instigate change, if you want to evoke passion, then speaking to the head just doesn't cut it. You need to speak to the heart and be able to say, you know, what are you thinking about this? Are you part of this? Are you missing out on something? All of these kinds of things. And it's almost preaching rather than teaching. It's a different kind of a concept of, it's a different kind of talk to what you do. So I think keynote speakers who realize that difference, I think are probably stronger, although I have to be careful how I say that, because it makes it sound like I have a clue about what differentiates a keynote. For me, that's what I see differentiates a keynote. And when I'm in a session that's supposed to be keynote-ish and actually just feels like you're trying to teach me something, I feel like I feel like the keynote speaker has, I don't know, missed the point somewhat or something.
Okay, so let's say you're doing a keynote and you're doing it to a group of technical people. So mm-hmm. obviously you've got experience that at the Microsoft events with the user group, talking to people internationally, typically in the tech field.
Yeah.
How do you appeal to the heart of those sort of people? They're there to do stuff, to learn stuff, to expand their mind, to become smarter. How do you speak to the heart when it's a largely technical audience?
Well, speaking to a technical audience in general is easy for me to do because I'm technical myself. I figure that I have a certain connection with these people. In many ways, I find it harder if I'm just preaching in a church because I have an audience who is largely non-technical. You know, they'll understand how to use their smartphone and things like that, but they're not going to have the faintest clue about what's happening in the Microsoft space or anything like that. But both times I try and look for some of the commonality. I like to think about what people are thinking and speak to that. It's no point trying to talk about a particular technology or anything like that, because even then half the room isn't interested. If I talk about the significance of Microsoft Dynamics, then half the room just goes, yeah, I don't do Dynamics, I'm not interested in this. Whereas if I speak about how improvements in frameworks and improvements in self-service tools and improvements in code generating code, then a lot of people identify with the emotions around that. They know that people have been worried that new technology will make them obsolete. You know, these kinds of emotions are ones that technical people feel, and that's a great opportunity to have that as something that I speak to be able to have a keynote style session rather than a technical let me explain something about Azure session. But also I like to think about what the people in the room who are non-technical are going to think. I think about the people that are at the session because they're attached to a vendor, but essentially in marketing. I think about the people that are relatively junior in their fields and so aren't going to have the faintest clue about an execution plan, for example. They're not interested in a 400 level technical session. I need to be able to speak to them about something which is not about anything technical per se, but speaks to the way that people feel about technology or the things that people are concerned regarding technology or something like this. It's got to be technically relevant but not technically focused, if you know what I mean. So it's a challenge. When I try and write comedy, I need to be thinking, okay, I need to be able to come up with something that the people in the room are going to find funny. Understanding that the people in the room are not like me. They're going to be slightly drunk, because they will be. They're going to be relatively non-technical, but they'll understand about smartphones, but they won't understand about Windows. It's always about picking your audience. When I speak to Australians versus speaking to Americans versus speaking to POMs, I need to think about the cultural differences. I've got a conference in India that I'm doing a pre-con for in August, and I'm already thinking about the fact that the times that I've taught classes in India, it's a very different experience to when I've taught classes in Australia or in the UK or in America. There's just, they react to things differently. It's just different.
So what, have you got an example of what sort of the differences are, or what resonates with one audience internationally versus another, demographic?
A lot of it comes down to the way that I get them to feel like they're engaging. So, for example, in the UK, I find that I want to be making the people feel relaxed in the room and be able to get them to a point where they're enjoying the session. They understand that I'm going to keep them engaged through a certain amount of humor and almost silliness and so on, because they would have grown up even seeing education mixed with entertainment and so on, and they understand the value of comedy and so on. They don't take themselves too seriously. In the US, people are very concerned about how their time is spent. I see Americans that are very concerned with their bonus structures and things like that, about trying to make sure that they're billable all the time. They don't want to feel like they're wasting their time at all. And to that end, if I go on some tangent that they can't see the relevance to, then they get upset. They feel like their time is so valuable, they need to be making sure that they're learning every moment of the day instead of being prepared for learning, if you know what I mean. In the UK, I find that I need to get people in a mindset for learning, and then that makes them receptive. In America, they come demanding to learn, and if I try and do anything to make them receptive, that actually makes them less receptive. And I I find that's a very interesting comparison between the two. I've gone into sessions in the US and approached them the wrong way, because I realized quite quickly in that I'm half the room's going, this is not what I came here for. I came here to invest my time in something and I want a return on this and so on, and not understanding that I'm setting them up for that return. When there's recordings that I've done, I find it very interesting to see which types of people respond to the particular sessions. I've got a couple that I recorded in the UK, and I found that that Americans don't respond to those sessions as well as non-Americans. It's just a psychological thing. I find Australia is kind of partway between the two. Australians don't take themselves too seriously, but they don't want to feel they start to get concerned if you're potentially taking them on a tangent. If they can't see exactly why they're going on the tangent, they start to stress it all. But they enjoy a good laugh, that's fine. But if they do start to worry after a while.
And what about the differences, say, in age? You've obviously got a range of ages when it comes to IT professionals. You've got typically an aging demographic when it comes to the hands-on, the infrastructure stuff, and perhaps you've got more a startup, you've got a millennial sort of group moving into the software directly, not so worried about the hardware. Yep. Does the different age demographic have an impact as well?
Yeah, I do find that it does. I mean, and it's... Anytime you've got an audience that stretches across generations, you find that, well, significantly, a joke is going to be received in a very different way comparing somebody who's in their 20s compared to someone who's in their 50s. But what I find is that when I'm giving a technical session to a group of like, 50 to 100, for example, even sometimes more than that, if I've got like 300 in the room, because I'm not speaking to a ridiculous size audience, and because I don't have a spotlight bearing down on me, I can actually see various people in the room and connect with those people. And by making sure that I'm connecting with various people from different demographics, I can then cater for the room relatively well. Like I'll be able to see someone in their 50s, someone male or female, someone who's young, someone who's relatively similar to me, those kinds of things. And if I'm looking at them and making eye contact and being able to see how things are going, then I start to be able to tell relatively quickly if certain segments of the audience are possibly getting lost. That's harder if you're speaking to a few thousand people with a spotlight coming at you where you really can't see the room. When I've done stand-up comedy, the hardest thing with that is the fact that I've got a spotlight on me, at least when I've been going down to the Rhino Room in Adelaide. It's a relatively well-known comedy place, but when I get up, first time I got up, I was just like, "Oh, I just had assumed that I'd be able to see the audience," and it took me a good couple of minutes to try to adjust to this whole thing. If I'm speaking to a bright light, I'm not speaking to people that I can see. I'm not telling from their eyes whether they're engaging in the jokes, and so on. But even when you're teaching a technical session, you need to be able to see in their eyes whether they're getting what you're on about, or whether they're just going, "Yeah, you're explaining something, but you lost me a few minutes ago." That kind of a thing it doesn't matter whether it's a technical session or whether it's inspirational. Being able to connect with people in the audience is big. When you've got a spotlight, you're needing to kind of feel the responses in the room. If you're telling a joke, you hear them laugh. If you say something impressive, you'll hear various people in the room kind of go, "Huh," making those little noises. And you can be conscious of kind of a nodding or something like that that's going on. The room somehow feels different when there's various kinds of responses. But it is harder to pick them up as far as planning the material, though, my take is that I need to be conscious of the fact that there's going to be people that are going to respond to some things nicely and that are not going to respond to some things nicely. There's going to be people in the room who take themselves too seriously. There's going to be people in the room who take nothing seriously enough. But essentially, if I can speak to the common elements, then even those people who don't necessarily experience those things will recognize that they are common elements anyway. I spoke at the conference in New Zealand that I did the keynote at, the Definity conference. I spoke about the movie The Incredibles. I also spoke about the movie The Princess Bride. They're two of my favorite movies. But in particular, I spoke about how in the movie The Incredibles. Have you seen it, by the way? Have you seen The Incredibles?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, I've seen The Incredibles.
So you're familiar that the villain syndrome, he creates technology to give people superpowers. And he says, because when everyone's super, then no one will be. It's his way of getting revenge on the people that have superheroes. It's to be able to provide everybody with technology that gives them superpowers. And in my session, I likened this to self-service BI. I was speaking to data professionals, but I'm just like, this is the thing. But back in the day, years ago, when people had punch cards, any kind of programming that wasn't punch cards was somehow taking you know the technology and putting it in the hands of regular people. Of course, these weren't regular people. They were just lesser levels of experts. You know, when people started to get languages that could be read easily, people, you know, were moving away from, you know, assembler code and so on. You know, that was a different kind of level of programming. When the .NET framework came through, people were suddenly like, oh, I don't need to code all this stuff in C to be able to do things. The framework provides that. I see Azure taking technology away. I see tuning wizards take technology away. I certainly see self-service BI take things away. You know, I mean, I grew up with a Commodore 64 where you had to type everything that you wanted to do. And then my kids have never had that. They've just always had Windows and where they can just move the cursor around and click on things. They've never had to write code before. And so things are getting simpler. So even if people haven't worried themselves about it, they can see they can see the way the technology is moving. They can appreciate the fears that they've had. They can appreciate the fact that they could become obsolete. That indeed, when everybody can do this thing that is my specialist skill, where does that leave me? I think that has a commonality that people of any generation should be able to feel. The older people can say, yes, I've been through that. It's a very real thing. The younger people can look at that and just go, oh, is that a thing? Oh, my goodness, I'm going to have to deal with this. And they can address that as their career progresses. But still, it reaches out to different types of people in different ways. But nevertheless, it's still a message that can reach everybody in the room. And I think that's the thing about a keynote. It has to reach everybody in the room, even if it's not reaching them in the same way. It just has to speak the right message to each person.
All right. So obviously, if people listening would look at it and say, okay, a keynote is very different from stand-up comedy, but
of course,
what do you think are the similarities? Obviously, there must be some commonalities. There must be some reasons or something that flows from one to the other. I mean, they're obviously public speaking. They're obviously talking in front of an audience. But is there anything else that, in your experience, having been through or being involved with both, that you can see the similarities that one works with the other or one enhances the other, in your opinion?
So I think with stand-up comedy, you have to remain less serious. You know, and I look at a keynote and there's words to describe a keynote, like poignant and profound and emotive. There is a certain emotion and a certain emotiveness to stand-up comedy, but I think the You're trying to evoke a response. It's about the response. You speak to somebody's gut as opposed to their heart. You just want them to burst out laughing at something, at the silliness or the ridiculousness or the awkwardness even with stand-up comedy. You kind of want to, even if the feeling that they feel is pity, you want to evoke some sort of a response. The entertainment factor is both. If somebody's sitting in a keynote session going, I'm not enjoying this, then you've got a problem. You've lost the audience. You need to be entertaining. You do need to still make people laugh and smile in a keynote, because that's how you speak to the heart. You know, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. And I think that analogy kind of almost fits for, if you're going to speak to someone's heart, you need to open them up a little first by making them laugh or making them smile or making them worry or something, which is quite similar to stand-up comedy. It's just that in stand-up, in any kind of comedy, you don't need to be poignant. You don't need to be sweet. You don't need to be interesting. In some ways, you can get away with stopping at the stomach and not making it to the heart, if you know what I mean. Does that fit?
Yeah, look, I think it does. And I think that there's a lot to be learnt with both, and there's an integration. And as you mentioned, people expect that whether they attend a keynote or whether they attend a comedy set, they expect to be entertained. I think that's the key thing. Now, how you entertain people with your own style, that's the critical thing, and that's what you've mentioned that you need to get people to respond to and be mindful of. But I think that certainly is the key element here. It's all about entertaining, and that can be very different from just...
Yeah, I don't know that I completely agree. I think for comedy, by all means, it's entertaining. But I think for a keynote, the point is not entertainment. The point is to evoke a desire for change. You know, a keynote that's just entertainment needs more substance. You know, it's lacking of something. I mean, it's this whole thing of all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. That's the kind of the technical session where somebody explains how to do something. But the flip side of that session is all play and no work makes Jack a mere toy. That side of thing is about the comedy bit. It's okay to be a mere toy for stand-up comedy. For a keynote, you have to get them to leave changed. You don't watch a TED talk and just laugh and think that was funny. The odd TED talk might fall into that category and might be very entertaining, and you might think, yep, that was fun. But at that point, it's no different to stand-up comedy. For a conference thing where people value their time, they don't want to simply be entertained. They want to be made to want change, to desire to be different, to have their interest piqued in some way. They want to leave a little different to how they went in. And entertainment alone won't do that. It needs to be slightly more. So I think it's just one of those things. The keynote is halfway between the technical session and the stand-up comedy. There's elements of both. But it's about that heart rather than necessarily just the head or just the gut. It's about speaking to that place in the middle.
Okay, all right. Well, we're getting towards the end of our time. What I might get you to do is just round up for us. Let us give us some summary of what we've discussed, or your things that you mentioned in the article, and then also let people know how they can get in contact with you, follow you, make sure that they're social with you wherever that is, so if they do have any queries, they can follow up with you directly.
Yeah, it's funny. It's from a wrap-up kind of perspective, I actually want to mention something that I haven't mentioned yet, which is this whole thing of saying many of your listeners are going to be people who occasionally do public speaking in one form or another. Quite a number of them would be the types that might get up at a user group or something. And if they're not, they should be. try and develop develop public speaking as part of what, you know, as part of their career, part of their tool set. And my challenge to them, my wrap up is going to be a challenge. My challenge to them is to actually think about what you're trying to convey in your session, to put elements of the keynote into a session that's being given, to be able to say, I don't want to just explain to you how to do something. I want to be able to explain why you want to be able to do this, what the thing is that makes you leave wanting to do something differently. It's all well and good to be able to show you how to set something up or how to configure something, but I want you to feel that you can achieve more. I want you to aspire to something better because of my session. I want you to ask yourself, when you're giving a session, is my audience going to leave with more than just knowledge? Are they going to be leaving with a passion, a desire to be different? But yeah, as far as how people reach me and so on, they can by all means email me at rob@lobsterpot.com.au. My Twitter handle is rob_Farley. And of course, I'm remarkably findable on the internet. People can reach out to me anytime, of course. And I would love to be able to hear from people and around what they're doing in their sessions, to be able to make them speak to more than just the head, to make them speak to the heart or even the gut, to be able to make it more than just academic. I think I'd love to be able to hear from people around that. And I'm also very willing to help people shape their sessions in a way that makes them stronger in a certain way, puts more of a story into a session they're giving that actually gives people a reason to want to stay in the session, because they want to feel what's going to happen with something. They're not just being told about a technology, but they're desiring to stay so that they can learn as much as they can and leave different. I'd love to be able to hear. Yeah, so rob_Farley on Twitter, and email is rob@lobsterpot.com.au.
Great. All right, we'll make sure that we put all those contact details and a link to the article that Rob wrote so that you can refer to that and then have a look. Let Rob know what you think about it. If it's something that, again, you need some assistance with or you'd like assistance, I'm sure that Rob will be more than happy to oblige. And I would suggest, too, that you're happy for people to turn up to the local comedy club in Adelaide when they're around.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the Rhino Room in Adelaide is in the process of moving. Next Monday, which is probably after the podcast goes live, but it's the Monday, the day before Anzac Day, is the last one at their current venue, and then in early May on the 8th, they're moving to a new venue, which is actually like two doors down from where Microsoft's offices in Adelaide are. We'll see how that goes, but I'm hoping to be able to get up and make people laugh at both the last one at the current venue and the first one at the new one. I just need to come up with material, which is always fun.
All right, we'll make sure that we put a link to that in there as well, and encourage people to come along and get your comedy act, as well as hopefully catch you at an upcoming keynote. But I'll take the opportunity on behalf of all the listeners to thank Rob for his time and all his input on the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.